from London.
Sarah Lyle, New York Times writer, correspondent, and now she just took her test, and she might even be English by now. Let's find out if that's true or not. Hi, Sarah. How are you this morning?
I'm really well. How are you? But it's afternoon.
Good afternoon,
here, you know.
Where you are. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So you passed your test. Are you in?
I've got to gather together tons and tons of documents and send them in, but I passed the life in the UK citizenship test. Yeah.
Life in the UK.
Yeah.
So what? Like, this is a test to everyone. You got to buy the book, right? Because I tried to find it online. You have to buy the book from them.
You have to buy the book, which is a lot of money. It's like £11, which must be, you know, $18.
It's a heavy
book. You have
to
buy the book. You can't do it online.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of whirlwind tour of British history, starting from the hunter-gatherer era to the last line in the history section is, and then David Cameron was elected prime minister.
That's where it ends.
Yeah, and then there's a whole bunch of stuff on, like, living in the UK, what to do about your garden, what your neighbors might be like.
What do you do about your, like, what?
You're supposed to keep your garden tidy, according to this book.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And talk to your neighbor, is that one?
Go and introduce yourself to your neighbors, according to this book that was the basis of the test I took, because they might help you.
But, you know, you don't even sound English, Sarah. How can you do this?
Well, I'm doing it so I can get a British passport because I'm sick of standing in the line where with all the people who are about to be deported, and it takes so long to get there, get through it.
Yes. Have you nearly been deported on a couple of occasions? Is that this is the reflex?
Well, when I first started coming here, I was going out with my now husband. I think they started to think I was maybe some kind of IRA terrorist.
Yeah. Well, you look it.
They really would quiz you very, very, very sharply every time you came in. And now I have a nice visa in my passport, but it doesn't help in terms of what line you can go in.
So does this mean you're actually abandoning your heritage and us?
Oh, no,
I just
get another passport.
Here?
I just want two passports.
Are you still an American?
Oh, yeah.
But what? That ended on a high note.
Yeah, but I'm totally American, but yeah. I now will have a British passport that also gets you into the EU, so mm-hmm. You don't have to stand in line in France either.
But your citizenship, are you both?
I guess you would be sort of both, but...
Okay, see, now we're getting at something. So. This is I'm a little disappointed. I mean, I know you went over there, and he's British, right?
He is.
That's why you went there.
I did.
And you have two British daughters. That should count for something. Well, they should just give it to you automatically anyway.
They have two passports also. But it's funny, you know, when I talked to the American Embassy about the passport situation, the American Embassy basically said, we don't care what other passports they have. As far as we're concerned, they're American citizens. And I think they do that for tax reasons. Basically, if you have an American passport, you have to pay American taxes no matter what you do or where you live.
Yeah. Well, do they show you your results on the test?
No, that's what's really terrible. They don't. They just say if you passed or failed. And I actually went and complained because something was misspelled on the test. There was a question about the Man Booker Prize, which is a literary prize. And the question was, what sort of prize is it? You know, is it an athletic prize? Is it a political prize? And they spelled it Mann, like Horace Mann, rather than with one N. And so I went and complained, and the lady said, it's above my pay grade. I'm not really interested.
Did she actually say that?
Well, she sort of said, contact the home office.
Yeah. You complain. I mean, do you complain a lot in England about things? Would you? I mean, is that an English thing to do, for example?
No, it's a completely un-English thing to do. If molten lava was pouring on you in the middle of this test, you wouldn't complain.
No. Could you note it? Say that it seems
to
be a bit
a
of lava
afterwards.
Or something like that? Or what?
You might write a letter to the Times newspaper. Dear sir, I'd just like to point out to you that there's a lava problem during the citizenship.
Yeah, but isn't there a lot of pressure to write a witty letter, though? I mean, I couldn't stand it.
You couldn't stand writing a witty letter?
I mean, I couldn't do it, number one. But, I mean, the pressure of trying to write a witty letter that would be published by the Times. Or isn't it? Because he owns it now, right? So it's not so...
No, they still like a nice witty letter. You're absolutely right, and you have to do it in the spirit of you're not actually complaining. Like, even if, you know, the hurricane stripped you naked as you were walking down the street and you were upset about something, you would have to do that in a kind of funny way.
Yeah. It's a good thing, because no one would notice in London, right, if you actually were in that condition. So that works out pretty good. So now you did you go to the funeral?
Well, I didn't, actually, because we only had one spot for the office, and my coworker went instead of me.
Was she more into it than you, or how did that work?
He likes a nice funeral, I think, my coworker.
Okay. Did he dress for it?
I think he wore a decent suit, and my colleague has very wild hair. It's John Burns, who, if people watch the Charlie Rose show, might see him on there. Oh. He has a kind of gray, massive afro, which is pretty impressive.
Oh, that's
cool. I think he sort of brushed it really well for the funeral.
On this occasion, one would.
Yes, they would.
One would. And this funeral was unlike any that I've seen around here, anyhow. It's very strange. And there's all these old guys in red coats who come out and who are the Knights of the Templar?
There are people called the Chelsea Pensioners, and they're old military people who get to retire into this kind of hotel for old military people. And they wear these bright red coats, and some of them are, appear to be well over 100.
It looks like it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And they kind of come out, and you hope, please live long enough to see the end of this funeral. And, the funeral is interesting in that you saw so many different military people coming out of their different services and different, I guess, whatever they're called, different types of... And they all, have really weird hats and really weird coats, and they get so into it.
Yeah.
So it looked a little bit like a costume party rather than a funeral. Yeah.
Are you expected to say anything if you're one of these gentlemen?
Do
you get up and say a few words? I mean, is it...
Well, no, not a funeral.
It's not that kind of a funeral.
They were all kind of... escorting the coffin down the street and, standing at attention and putting their guns from one arm to another and taking their hats off, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And then the route goes all around all your major landmarks, right? I mean...
Yeah, so a little sightseeing at the same time.
Yeah. Like your last tour, I love it.
Exactly.
I suppose English people never actually take this tour, but if you're coming there, that's probably take the same route that the hearse took.
You could, and probably not that day because all the streets were closed off and you couldn't really go anywhere.
Yeah, okay. And tell us, what are some of the highlights of the funeral? were there many highlights? I know that London...
Well, it's funny, my office asked me to live tweet the funeral.
Oh, yeah. No,
which seemed like a legitimate thing to do because it was a big news event, and I got so many angry tweets from people saying this is the most disrespectful thing I've ever seen, and also the oxymoronness of live tweeting a funeral.
Yeah.
And some people tweeted, please, whatever you do, don't live tweet my funeral.
Yeah, I saw that on there.
Yeah.
That wasn't me, though. I wish I would have thought of that one. That was a good one.
Well, the funny thing was she really liked to control things, Mrs. Thatcher, and she apparently organized her entire funeral.
Right.
And she spent years revising it and thinking of new stuff. So not a lot left to chance there.
It was her legacy, was the funeral. And I know she did all the music and everything, right? And there was some pretty
elaborate.
She
did the music herself. Yeah, she recorded some songs. And she chose really good hymns, actually. And so the music was really, really pretty.
Yeah. And the Essex man was there, I saw.
The Essex man?
Yeah. The Essex man. This guy who was a local... Thatcherite hero.
Oh,
the guy who went from the miner
yeah.
to stockbroker.
Exactly. The one upwardly mobile person they could find.
That's such a good story, though. He's from little mining village, right?
Yeah.
And then he became who else was there? They had other, certainly the officials. Now, who presided over that and said most of the stuff?
Well, there was just every clergy person in Great Britain seemed to be there. So a lot of bishops and reverends, et cetera, and they sort of took turns saying stuff.
But the Bishop of London was the main guy, right?
Yeah, he was great. He gives a really good funeral address. I would have him at my funeral, definitely.
It was good because he mentioned the duck liver.
He did. Well, what he did? He actually said pate, and I couldn't figure out on my computer how to get an accent on the E. So when I referred
It'd
to
be
it
pate,
in my
otherwise.
Tweet, I just said duck liver because I didn't want it to sound like pate, like somebody's head.
You're referring to the bishop's pate. It would be a terrible...
Yeah, exactly. Well, and the story was that he was telling a humorous anecdote about Mrs. Thatcher, and he said kind of fondly, he was at a reception with her once, and she sort of looked at him and scolded him and said, stay away from the pate... It's very fattening.
Yeah. It's a good story. It's probably in the telling more than the recounting.
Well,
I think
the thing was she just liked to lecture. I met her one time at some sort of book event.
We did.
And it wasn't a conversation. I mean, she was lecturing about how much fuel was on her plane on the way over and how many days of rain they'd had. It was really weird, actually. But she
knew how much fuel was left on the plane?
She had been interested to learn how heavy the plane was on account of the fuel. So she talked about it for about 5 minutes, all her new information about fuel weights.
Boy, you know, that must say a lot about her, that we didn't, you know, it helps understand her more, doesn't it?
Well, I think so. I mean, it seems sort of by the end of her, I was about to say reign, of course she wasn't the queen, she was just prime minister.
Yeah.
At the end of her premiership, most of her cabinet meetings did consist of her lecturing to everyone, and she really hated people to talk back. She was like the kind of nation's school teacher.
Yeah, lecturer.
Yeah.
Interesting. And did you see the movie, by the way?
The movie with Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah, with Margaret Thatcher playing Meryl Streep.
I did.
Yeah. Was she actually dancing with her dead husband in the end there, or is that something they put in the movie, do you think?
I think that was really true. I think she definitely did spend a lot of time dancing with her dead husband,
okay,
as many widows do.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, when you're alive, they won't come near you. When you're dead, they're dancing with you.
The Bishop of London did make it clear in the address that she was more upset by the death of her husband than she was about losing power when she finally got kicked out of office. But the way he told it made it sound like it was kind of neck and neck, like we'd all be really surprised to hear, but the personal life edged out the political life by a tiny bit.
And the Camerons. This is the first a lot of us in the rest of the world have had a chance to look at them as a couple, for example.
Right.
What's with her hat? What was she wearing?
You know, she's sort of a trendsetter
for
the UK, and she's very careful about what she wears.
What's her name?
Her name is Samantha.
Samantha.
And her nickname is Sam Cam.
Sam Cam.
Her last name is Cameron. And the problem with her outfit was, yeah, she looked like a flight attendant. So people started calling her Pan Am Sam Cam. And she put her hair up. She was kind of, it was a little bit like a schoolmistress look. Put her hair up, put this kind of tiny little round pillboxy, but it didn't stick up. It was just like a round little disc that covered her sort of hair bun.
Yeah.
And she had a big floppy bow on her blouse.
Yeah, was it like,
honestly, you wanted to say, please, can I have some more ginger ale when you're done with that?
Yeah, a pussy bow, they call those.
A pussy bow, exactly.
Yeah. And Thatcher used to wear those, right? I mean, that was her, she had a fashion sense.
That was one theory, that it was kind of an homage to Mrs. Thatcher's
homage to the pussy bow.
Yeah. But the interesting thing is Twitter went crazy with it, and then that raised an interesting debate. And here we are, you know, marking the death of this amazing, whatever you think of her, this amazing woman who broke all these barriers, and all we're doing is talking about what this woman is wearing to the funeral.
Yeah.
I mean, I was talking about it too, don't get me wrong.
Did it surprise you who America sent to the funeral?
Well, there was a sort
Bachman
of thing about,
and Kissinger and Cheney.
Well, they got invited. It was kind of weird thing
invited.
Because it wasn't a state funeral, it was a military funeral, and I guess there's some important diplomatic distinction. So America didn't send any cabinet secretaries, for example, because it wasn't that kind of event. So it was kind of friends of Thatcher came. So a lot of people who were in office when she was in office came.
Okay.
And Kissinger came, as you say.
Yeah. Bachman sneaked in there because she likes to be there when it's happening.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then weirdly enough, Fergie, you know, the Duchess of York, the red-haired one, she was in there.
Yeah.
You know, it was kind of like a random, you weren't really sure why some of these people came, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm. But you're just watching the new conservatives there, it's like the dregs of Thatcherism. You know, they dress nice, but I mean, none of them have done anything in particular, right?
Well, it's a hard place to govern, it really is. Yeah. Things aren't going so well here right now, you know? And the funny thing was, I'm not sure if anybody saw this photo, but it's worth looking at. There's one photo where you could see the Prime Minister and his wife sitting right in front of the Chancellor of the Exchequer and his wife. And this is in the funeral. And the Prime Minister and his wife were laughing at something, and the Chancellor and his wife looked like they were incredibly upset. And the contrast was really interesting. And, the question was, who would suffer most from this photo, the Prime Minister for looking really frivolous or the other guy for looking like he had no sense of humor?
Yeah.
And the jury's still out on that one.
Yeah. I have the I have her death certificate here. Don't ask me how I got it.
You have her death certificate?
You can get anything on the web these days. Yeah. Death registration, Westminster.
Date and place. It's definitely in Britain, though, right?
Yes.
It isn't like the birth certificate issue?
No, oh, you're right. No, yeah. 8th of April, 2013, the Ritz Hotel, where she
died. Yeah, nice place to die, right?
Yeah.
Classy. There was an actor a few years ago, and I can't remember, it was one of these great English actors who was basically drunk for the last 30 years of his life. He lived at the Ritz, too. Mm. No, actually, no, I take it back. He lived at the Savoy. And the story was that he took ill and was kind of wheeled out for what would be his final wheeling out. He was sort of, you know, semi-conscious, and all these guests saw him and looked upset, and he just looked at them and he said, "It was the food."
It was.
The Ritz would be a nice place to die if you were
if
go
you got
to
pick
right?
one, I guess.
Yeah.
Roads, you know, the roadside inn's nice.
You like the roadside inn better than the Ritz?
Well, they got the theme rooms.
I see.
You could, you know, die in a garret or something. Right. That's how I'd like to go, I know. Baroness Margaret Hilda Thatcher, surname Roberts.
Right.
13th October, 19... Let's give her a break. In Lincolnshire. Occupation, stateswoman, retired. That's a good summary. That's an English sort of summary, isn't it?
Yeah. That's a nice occupation, stateswoman.
Retired, yeah.
Retired.
Widow of Dennis Thatcher, company director, retired.
Right.
Better than saying dead, you know. I say retired, that's a good thing. So did he get to be a baron? No, I've never understood that. Does he automatically be a...
I guess it's a knight if you're knighted a baron. I know it's someone's going to shoot me for not knowing this stuff, but it's I think a baronet, see, you inherit, and you get, you know, appointed a knight. And their son, interestingly enough, became Sir Mark Thatcher, and he was, you know, involved in lots of weird foreign policy mishaps. Whereas her daughter, Carol, never got anything, which I thought was a little rich.
Oh.
Not very nice at all.
So then would one have called... Dennis, his baron?
Sir Dennis.
Sir Dennis.
Sir Dennis.
But
yeah.
he'd be a baron then, right? Full baron with full
honors? Well, no, I honestly don't believe that. I think he'd be a knight. And what's weird, if you're a man and you get a title, your wife immediately gets a nice title to go with it. So if you got made a lord and you're put in the House of Lords, your wife becomes a lady. But if you're the woman and you get that title, your husband doesn't get anything, which isn't very fair.
No, it doesn't seem fair at all.
No.
In other issues that are sweeping the continent and elsewhere, horse meat. Can you help us with this horse meat thing? Now, it's funny because most of the problem, obviously, is in France because they like horse meat.
I guess.
They see nothing wrong with a little horse meat in their bologna. In fact, they expect it, I would think. And I can't speak.
The whole point of bologna is it has every sort of meat that exists and things that aren't even meat at all, right?
Doesn't matter if it galloped to get there or if it waddled or whatever. Yeah, slithered, anything.
Well, here they're upset. You know, there isn't supposed to be horse meat. There's been a lot of meat-related scandals here over the years. You know, there was that mad cow disease problem a few years ago.
Sure.
And so there was a lot of, you know, supposed new standards about meat inspection and where the meat came from. And
wouldn't they be worried about cow meat then rather than horse meat?
Well, you did before because it might have come from an insane cow.
Right.
And the insane cows
but there's no crazy horse
brain
meat
damage. Right. And who knows about the horse? I mean, people really love animals here. So a lot of the, like, people would give more money to, there's a donkey charity that gets more money than people would give to children's charities, for example.
A donkey charity?
It's a home for retired donkeys.
Where is it? That sounds so sweet.
It's in the countryside. The idea is instead of, you know, slaughtering the donkey for beef meat or whatever, for hamburgers, they let it, you know, go and live out the last 10 years of its life in happiness in the pastures of this donkey charity. And they have so much money that the donkeys could basically have their own hotel rooms if they wanted.
Well, I mean, are there a lot of abandoned donkeys and older donkeys in England or in the
You'd
UK?
You'd be surprised.
What do they use them? What would they do with them?
What did they do with their old donkeys?
Well, no, what do they have them for in the first place?
I don't know. And I think also they collect donkeys from the third world.
And bring them to England? Isn't that sweet?
Downtrodden donkeys from Asia and Africa could come and live in this donkey sanctuary also.
It's still a liberal society, isn't it? But that's what they have.
If you're a donkey, yeah.
If you're a donkey, yeah. It ends there, apparently. Okay. But, you know, it's funny because here is all we heard about the horse meat crisis in Europe, you know, and people, I mean, and I imagine that the English would be particularly upset because, like, there was 0% horse meat in products coming from England, but there is a lot of it coming from other places.
Well, they have a little problem with Europe anyway.
Yeah,
but that,
I've
I don't know if that's
true.
I mean, there has been some evidence there was some horse meat in their meat also.
Oh, well,
I want to say one more thing about the Donkey Charity. Tomorrow
is
the London Marathon, and a lot of people dress up and run for charity, and there is a donkey charity that has a person wearing a donkey outfit, and it's a they've made this like incredible donkey head that looks just like a real donkey, and it weighs something like 60 pounds, I think, and you put it over your head, and then to sort of drive home this notion of these poor donkeys who have to work so hard, this guy is going to go through the marathon while wearing enormous packs of sort of equipment on his back to show the plight of the donkey and how hard they have to work. And they've done it before, and it took them, the guy who did it before in this same costume, 10 hours to complete the marathon.
How long does it usually take?
Well, I think if you're running, it's supposed to take 4 or 5 hours, right?
Yeah.
So he's like, they can't even run. He has to walk slowly in the donkey outfit.
Oh, yeah. Does he run with a guy behind him?
No, it's not like a pantomime. He walks upright, sort of weighted down by these packs of sticks or whatever he's carrying on his back.
Okay. That'd be an unfair advantage if you actually had two guys.
It would. I guess they'd have to double the time, right?
Running
so
as
it would
a donkey.
Take them 20 hours.
Yeah. Possibly. I remember seeing it. There was some guy wore an Eiffel Tower while running it. I don't know if it was last year.
Yeah, they wear all sorts of weird stuff here.
I mean, and it was made out of metal. It was like made out of metal piping, iron pipes and stuff. It was crazy.
If he wanted to be authentic, right?
I don't think it's made out of plumbing pipes. I've been to Paris, and it didn't look like plumbing pipes to me.
Well, and it was like a modern art take on the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
One guy went in a deep sea diving outfit once, and that took him like a couple weeks, I think.
Other things, we're over the Richard III thing, right? Are they still digging up car parks, looking for missing?
Isn't that great? There's all this debate when the Richard III came out, you know, he was in this parking lot, how much his parking ticket would have cost had he been there all those years. And then the notion of, and then
pretty
somebody
penny.
Said, yeah, but he's probably lost the ticket, so he gets fined for that, too.
Have they found anyone else? Did it set off a frenzy of car park excavation?
No, but they're fighting over where to bury him, and there's all these people who are claimed to be Plantagenet descendants.
Oh, sure.
And they're now saying, like, well, he's my cousin kind of thing, so he needs to be buried properly. So they're having a little tussle over that, too.
So they should pay for it. They should pay for the internment, then.
Well, and they should pay for the parking, too, really.
Those Plantagenets, so they're all the same. They were cheap then, they're cheap now.
Well, you know, anything to get out of your obligations to the state, right?
Yeah, yeah. Are there any missing leaders, though? I mean, kings? Is Richard IV, is he accounted for? Or?
That's a really interesting question.
Yeah.
I don't know if every single one is accounted for. I have absolutely no idea about that.
Yeah.
Who is Richard IV, anyway?
I don't think there was one.
There
was Richard Chamberlain, I think. It was Richard IV, actually. He never took the title because he's American.
One of the questions on the citizenship exam had to do with the divine right of kings and Charles I. Mm. And I learned all about that, too.
Cool.
And I think that was right.
I bet you got 100 on it because you're so smart.
Well, no, because I took a few practice ones, and I was kind of hovering at the 80% mark, and you have to get 75% to pass. So I was a little worried because some of the questions are, you know, they range from history to things like, do you, when you're buying a lottery ticket, how old do you have to be?
Oh, that's a tough one. How old?
You have to be 18.
Wow.
And did you know that in Northern Ireland, you register to vote in a different way than you register to vote in England?
How do you do it?
You register by individual application rather than a household registry.
Now you're just showing off, Sarah. This is showing off.
I also had a question about April Fool's Day. Can you imagine? Isn't that great?
What'd they ask?
They asked the holiday in which newspapers often make up fake and amusing stories is called, and the answers were like Valentine's Day, Boxing Day, St. Patrick's Day, April Fool's Day. And imagine being some, you know, person from China who wanted to move here and would just learn how to speak English and had to deal with a question like that. For them, it must have been really, really hard.
Well, you know, they should ask about references on Monty Python. If you get all the jokes, like the places and the jokes related to places and people, In Monty
then you get
Python.
In automatically.
That would weed them out.
Well, apparently Mrs. Thatcher didn't think Monty Python was funny at all. She didn't understand the parrot joke.
No. She probably didn't like the exploding stuff, too. People.
No, probably
exploding.
Not.
Not a good thing. Well, there's so much more to cover, but we got to run. I know you probably have things to do, too. By the
How
way,
many
did...
many more monarchs to dig up from parking lots?
Did your daughters see Justin Bieber when he was through?
They didn't.
They
but
didn't
he's
go.
Gotten a lot of trouble on this tour. Have you been following all his mishaps?
Oh, yeah. Have to.
It's
inescapable.
He was late.
It's inescapable.
Then he made the unfortunate, you know, signing in the Anne Frank Museum, and then in Norway they had to cancel school because they were afraid everyone would cut school and go see him.
Yeah.
What is the deal with those panty wears that have, you know, that are like sagging in the middle? They're so unattractive.
I hadn't noticed. I guess I hadn't looked at them that closely.
No, they're like a crime against humanity.
Yeah, well, he is, I think, as well. But did your daughters want to go? I bet they did.
No, they liked him a few years ago. Now they're too old for him.
They're past
they like
all
other
that.
People.
Okay, you lucked out on that one. Yeah. Thanks so much, Sarah Lyle. Thanks for speaking with us.
Very nice to talk to you. Have a nice rest of your day over
stay
there.
Stay American, will you please? That's all I ask.
No, I will. Don't worry about it.
Okay, Sarah Lyle, New York Times.
Bye.